This week, I got to talk with Ruth Ware about her newest thriller, One Perfect Couple. It is so fun. It is a perfect beach read. I blew through it because I just had to have answers for what was going to, how everything was going to come together in the end. But it is about Lila. Lila is in a bit of a rut. Her postdoctoral research has fizzled out. She's pretty sure they won't extend her contract. And things with her boyfriend, Nico, an aspiring actor, aren't going great. When the opportunity arises for Nico to join the cast of a new reality TV show, The Perfect Couple, she decides to try out with him. A whirlwind audition process later, Lila finds herself whisked off to a tropical paradise with Nico, boating through the Indian Ocean towards Ever After Island, where the two of them will compete against four other couples: Bear and Angel, Dan and Santana, Joel and Romy, and Connor and Xana, in order to win a cash prize. But not long after they arrive on the deserted island, things start to go wrong. After the first challenge leaves everyone rattled and angry, an overnight storm takes matters from bad to worse. Cut off from the mainland by miles of ocean, deprived of their phones, and unable to contact the crew that brought them there, the group must band together for survival. As tensions run high and fresh water runs low, Lila finds that this game show is all too real and the stakes are life or death. This is perfect if you were already a fan of shows like Love Island, Big Brother, or Survival, or The Traitors, which I'll get some special shout-outs in the book. But even if you aren't into those shows, I think you will really enjoy this as a very fun summer read. It's a little bit of a departure from some of the more like gothic vibes of Ruth Ware's writing, and I just really enjoyed it. So I was so excited to talk to her about it. We get into how she researched to create this book and also what stereotype she would be if she was on a reality TV show. So let's get into it. I've been a fan of yours for a really long time. I've been reading your books for years now. But before we dive into this one, I did want to get to know a little bit more about you as an author. So when did you know that you wanted to write, or like, when was your like moment where you were like, I'm going to start writing a book?
Oh, I mean, there's probably two answers to this, really. I think one answer is just forever. I have always loved telling stories. I've always wanted to be a writer. Like, one of the first conversations I can remember having about kind of, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up was with my mum, and she asked me and I said, I think I'd really like to be a writer. And she said, which is both good advice and also probably a bit more practicality than I needed at the time, because I was only about kind of five or six. She said, well, I think that's a really great idea, but I think you might find there is a lot of other people who'd like to be a writer too. So maybe you should have a plan B. So I was like, okay, well, if I can't be a writer, then maybe I could write the descriptions on the backs of books. Do you think that's a job? And my mom was kind of like, yeah, I guess somebody must be paid to do that. So I was like, okay, well, if I can't be a writer, that is what I want to do. I want to write the descriptions on the backs of books. But I guess the sort of the other answer to the question is I didn't really start trying to write in earnest for publication until I was in my 30s. And for years, I had just written and kind of put them under the bed. And I think a big part of that was because, which was probably actually what was behind my mum's answer as well. You know, we just came from a really regular, normal working family. You know, my mum worked as an assistant in the library services. My dad was an IT manager for the council. We didn't know anybody who worked in the creative industries. We didn't know anybody who made their jobs that way. And so it just felt like writing was a career that kind of other more special people did. You know, people who were sort of these rarefied kind of creative characters who, you know, probably lived a much more fancy existence than I did. And I think that sort of disconnect continued into my adult life. And it was only when I had my kids and I basically realized that unless I found a way to make my writing pay, I wasn't going to be able to carry on doing this because, you know, I had a really demanding job. I had, by this point, two small kids. I had, you know, all the other kind of just myriad life admin that, you know, everybody is dealing with. And I had this idea for a book, and I thought, I really want to write this book. But yeah. In the same realization, I sort of thought, I'm not going to have the time to do this when I go back to work. I was on maternity leave with my second baby, and we're lucky enough to have quite generous maternity leave in the UK. It's sort of only partially funded, but it's the best part of a year. But yeah. I suddenly thought, this is kind of my hard deadline. And after that, I'm just not going to have time to do anything. And that was what really kind of pushed me to get off my butt and actually write this, not just for myself, but with a view to actually sending it out to agents and trying to get a publication deal. So that was a long answer to a very simple question.
No, that's great. I love that, like, it kind of forced you to, like, the deadline was kind of like, no, like, if I really want to try this, like, I need to try it. And I think a lot of people feel that way, that, like, it's just these, like, mythical, really creative people who get to be writers. So I think that's really cool. What is your writing process like? So how do you approach, like, starting each book, or has it been different for each of them?
I would say there are differences between each book. You know, each book wants to be written in a slightly different way in terms of the amount of research and kind of the sort of how long it takes me for kind of, you know, for the ideas to all sort of cohere and kind of come together. Mm-hmm. But I have a pretty tried and tested kind of method now, which has worked for a few books. Have to say, that doesn't stop every single book being an absolutely terrifying moment when you open up that Word document and it's blank and you're like, how am I going to fill this with 100,000 words? Like, yes. That is a horrible moment every single time and never gets any better. But I write pretty much on a yearly schedule just because of the way my deadlines work out. I tend to start a book in the kind of late autumn, write for sort of 6-7 months, deliver in the kind of middle of summer, and then lucky me, that means I get to stop just at the point when my kids go off for school holidays, because our school holidays in the UK are quite late. We have them in August, which is great because they're a bit older now, but when they were smaller, you know, there's just no writing with kind of 5 and 6 year olds running around the house. It's just not gonna happen. And while my editors edit the book, and then in the autumn, they come back to me with, you know, all of their notes. I incorporate them. I edit the book. We go back and forth. And then late autumn, the whole process starts again. But in terms of kind of the planning process, it's different every single time. And this, sometimes my books come to me as kind of an idea on a plate. And other times they're more kind of an amorphous kind of collection of inspirations sort of swirling around in my head until they cohere into something kind of vaguely book shaped. Sometimes they're half an idea and I have to figure out what the missing part is to kind of make it into a book sized thing. But One Perfect Couple was, luckily enough, more or less a book that got given to me on a plate. And I was doing an interview. It was an event. I was doing the interviewing with the writer, Gillian McAllister. It was a recent book club event. And I can't remember how we got on the topic, but we were talking about reality TV and, you know, how extremely easy it would be to murder one of the contestants if you were on there, because they're generally all infuriating. And Gillian said, sounds like a Ruth Ware book. And I kind of laughed it off and sort of didn't really think too much about it. But when I came to start this book, something about her words came back to me. And I sort of thought, that does sound like one of my books. I hadn't watched a ton of reality TV since I was completely addicted to the first couple of series of Big Brother, which came out while I was at university in the UK. And like all of my friends, I was absolutely riveted.
I have been obsessed with that show in the past.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. But I think I sort of drifted away from it. And I think what I loved about the first couple of seasons, and actually what I loved about Traitors, the UK version, which came out a couple of years ago, was, which is kind of reflected in my books as well, is I am mostly fascinated by extraordinary things happening to regular people. And I think for me, what reality TV slightly lost over the sort of subsequent decades was the fact that so many of the contestants seemed to be going on it for fame and fortune. You know, they were in it not to play the game, but because they wanted, you know, a modeling deal or a profile or, you know, whatever it was. So it kind of morphed into something that was actually not so much about just ordinary people in a really strange artificial situation, but much more about just famous people wanting to get more famous, really. Yes. And I didn't find that as interesting as a kind of concept. But anyway, so I went back, I watched a bunch of reality TV shows, I read a bunch of books. There's a really interesting one called I Didn't Come Here to Make Friends by one of the former contestants on The Bachelor. I was lucky enough to be able to speak to someone who'd been on a reality TV show, and he gave me some helpful pointers. And gradually this plot sort of started to take shape in my head. And the very first chapter, it's not even really a chapter, I guess it's more of a kind of prologue of One Perfect Couple, is a scene that's completely different to the rest of the book. It's told in the third person. The rest of the book is all in first person. And it's a man and a woman fighting for their lives. And they're in the sea, they're trying to kill each other. She's trying to drown him and he's fighting back and trying to kill her. You don't know who they are, you don't know why they're there, but I knew, and that was the end, not the end point of the book, because there is some stuff that happens after, but it was the kind of the climactic point of the book, the point where everything kind of crunches. And I knew right from the start that that was where this book was heading. And I wrote that chapter first, and then everything else flowed from there as a means of getting my characters to that point. And figuring out how and why they end up there.
Yes. Yeah. I loved, like, I've definitely, I used to be a huge Big Brother fan, like watched the live feeds and everything and was like totally obsessed with who was going to win. And then I honestly started reading more is what really happened. So it's like, it takes a lot of time to keep up with a season of Big Brother, as you probably know. Yeah. But I loved in your book, I haven't seen the UK version. They just did a US version of The Traitors. And I really liked that this season as well, too. But I loved in your book how you talked about, like, it used to be normal people doing those shows. That's what's so fun about, I can't even remember exactly, but, like, Dr. Will, for anyone who's watched American Big Brother, like, his seasons, kind of up until season 8 or 9, that's, like, something, like, the fandom would even talk about, how it used to be so much more just, like, these normal people who did want to see, like, it really actually felt like the social experiment that they call the show, because it really, everyone really was on there, like, wow, like, mostly for the money, like, it, not even, like, the fame is kind of there. I think it's, like, the inclusion of Instagram and, like, social media getting so big is what made it where, like, now people would go on to hope they could, like, sell flat tummy tea or something after it, basically. <That's> so, <true. laughs> So I was like, all the little reality TV inclusions in this one, I was like, that's like having watched reality TV for like 10-ish years and like seen it change. It definitely has totally changed. So I really enjoyed that part of the book for sure. The other thing I was kind of wondering about is, are the main character, Lila, is like, she couldn't be more removed from reality TV almost. So like, she has like a research job, she's a scientist, essentially. And so through her perspective, I feel like because she was so removed, it made her a good narrator for anyone who hadn't watched reality TV. Was that kind of on purpose?
Gosh, that's a really good question. I mean, an outsider narrator is in some ways always the easiest, because you're exactly right. It gives the narrator the opportunity to reflect on questions or mentally ask things that the reader is asking themselves. So it's an easy shortcut to explain things about the book that you might not otherwise have the opportunity to articulate if the person who is at the center of the action is someone who takes all of this stuff for granted. And Lila very much does not take any of this for granted. She's not a big reality TV show watcher. So it partly was that it was an opportunity for me to sort of have a look at some of the things that we take for granted about reality TV, and through Lila's eyes to kind of go, huh? You know, because she's not used to all of this. So to her, a lot of the things that are just general kind of tropes of the genre are weird or remarkable or, you know, questionable in some way. So that was a big part of it. Another big part of it was my husband is a scientist. Not so much these days, he's kind of slightly out of the lab now, but his early career was basically very similar to Lila's trajectory, although he didn't work on chikungunya. And he had been telling me to write a pandemic book for years because he worked in influenza and various other sort of respiratory diseases. And he'd said, you know, there's always an influenza pandemic every 50 years. You know, we had one in 1918, we had one in 1965. There's a big one due. You should write this book. And I kept saying, oh, nobody wants to read a book about a pandemic. Shut up. And of course, now really nobody wants to read a book about a pandemic. Right. So I felt, it's not that I didn't believe him, but I was like, oh, he was right. But anyway, I felt slightly guilty about that. And I guess in a kind of way, Lila was my sort of apology to him to say, scientists are really interesting people. But the more I wrote Lila, the more I kind of started to think about how, obviously, in the book, she is the stand-in for the detective character. You don't quite know how reliable she is, or, you know, who ends up killing who on the island. I don't think it's much to say. Not everybody makes it out alive. And actually, on the kind of scale of body counts, this book is definitely up there. I haven't actually sat down and worked out if it's higher than One by One, which is my other big kind of body count book. But they're probably neck and neck, if not one perfect couple slightly ahead. I completely taught myself in a circle there, and I had a point that I was getting to, and now I've forgotten what it was. I was about science. So Lila is the stand-in for the detective in the book.
Yes.
And this made me kind of reflect on actually how compatible the skills of a scientist and a detective are, because ultimately what science is the quest for truth and the quest to answer often very difficult questions where you may hope that the answer goes one way. I think most scientists have some kind of, not an agenda, that maybe sounds too, you know, but the book opens with Lila looking at the results of a series of experiments that she has been very much hoping will prove a thesis. She has been hired, in fact, to try and prove this hypothesis, and it doesn't. It shows no results at all. It's completely meaningless data as far as what she was hoping. So she obviously has been hoping for it to work out one way, and I think that's a pretty common thing in science. You might hope for one thing for, you know, the sake of the world. You might hope for another thing for the sake of your results. You might be hoping for a different thing for the sake of your career. But the scientist's job is to try and be as dispassionate as possible and to really remove their own feelings and preconceptions from the result. And that is why double-blind trials exist. They exist so that the researcher even does not have the power to affect the outcome, because they don't know what the outcome is. And that is what a good detective should do, we hope. You know, and I think similarly, it's not always how we know, it's not always how the police work. They often go in with a thesis, they're hoping to prove that thesis, they're trying to find the evidence to back it up, they have a hunch who did it. That's not good detective work, just like it's not good science. And it was really interesting for me to sort of reflect on how Lila's qualities as a scientist kind of force her to face up to what's on happening on the island. And as events start to unravel, and as more and more questions start being raised about how certain people on the island do not have the same agenda as everybody else, the data is starting to show patterns that Lila very, very much does not want to be true, both for her own survival and for the sake of other people on the island. But as a good scientist and as someone who has a certain amount of personal courage. She's generally the person on the island who faces up to that and looks the truth in the eye and says, yes, this is where we are. This is what we've got to deal with. And this is what it means for us going forward. So, yeah, so it was kind of interesting on both counts. It was fun writing a character who wasn't kind of a writer or a journalist or, you know, a few of my previous characters have been. But it was also fun writing someone with a really kind of detective mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she really is like the most level-headed one on the island for sure, which is like, not to get into spoilers, but pretty crucial for like the people who do survive. So I it was cool. I really liked reading her perspective, but I love all of those thoughts too. Like, it really is like the scientific approach really is so similar to solving something because you're just trying to come up with theories for stuff. That's really cool. So there are 10 contestants on this show. And
not for long.
Not for very long. That is true. And so I'm gonna be honest, when we first get on the yacht with all of them, I was like, okay, this is a lot of people to meet at once. And then it was like I never struggled with understanding like or remembering who was who. And I think some of it is just like how Lila explains it as they're kind of coming up and interacting with her. But how did you approach writing or just characters in general, but in this case, writing like such a large cast and like keeping each person distinct still?
Yeah, it was tough. I've had two books where I've had to do this, One by One being the other. There's some similarities between One by One and One Perfect Couple, because they're both kind of not locked room mysteries, but they're both sort of situations with a closed cast of people who are kind of in a very artificial situation. And there wasn't really, normally in a book you get to kind of drip feed the characters in, you get, you know, you can allow the reader to get to know XYZ before you introduce ABC, and that's a much easier way of handling it. With this book, just structurally, I didn't have that luxury. There wasn't really any way I could get Lila. I mean, obviously, like the production side of things, I did as much as I could before this sort of crucial scene where she meets all the other contestants. So hopefully the kind of the crew side of the reality TV show, I tried to give people as good a handle as possible. But yeah, there was just no way of getting around the fact that Lila was going to have to meet 8 characters at the same time. And that meant the reader was too. And that was that meeting scene was probably the one that I worked on most in edits. Both before I handed the book in and then after, when my editors read it and had some questions about, you know, differentiating people. I actually changed Joel's name. He was originally called Joe. And my editor was like, I keep getting him mixed up with Dan. Can you make them more different? And I think a big part of that was because they both had these kind of very sort of quite stereotypically British 3-letter names. You know, it was just a bit too close. So I changed it to Joel, which kind of felt sufficiently different to have a slightly different flavor, different number of letters. And just tried to kind of make everybody a bit more physically distinct from the get-go. But I think a big part of the problem was that I typically think about my characters a lot before I start writing them. I'm often conjuring who's going to be in the book and what the cast is before I even set pen to paper. So I had been thinking about these characters for probably a couple of months before I started writing. And then additionally, a couple months it took me to write the first few chapters of the book before we even meet them. So I knew them really well. And there were points where I was like, well, obviously he's like that. And my editor was like, but you haven't actually put that on the page. And I was like, oh, good point. It's sort of like when you know someone really well, it's quite hard to pick out what their defining characteristics are. And you sort of have to take a step back and think, if I were meeting this person for the first time. But, you know, as previously discussed, because Lila is meeting for the first time, in some ways that made it much easier because she's able to do, as you pointed out, do the legwork in terms of she's also trying to remember who these people are. So she's trying to pick out characteristics about them. But for sure, it was tough. So I'm glad to hear that it worked for you and you did not flip up.
Yeah, because it's like even a common experience when you start watching a reality TV show, like sometimes with like Big Brother, there are like 18 people that you're like supposed to try to like remember. And I feel like it always takes a couple of weeks to like really remember everyone and like have them be really separate. And it's like, I don't normally, I have a friend who he like has a note every time he's reading any book and like writes notes about each character so he can go back to it. And I was like, maybe I'm going to have to do that. And I remember thinking that. And then I was like, oh, I guess I'm not really needing it. So they stood out for me.
The thing that I struggled most with, actually, because I don't typically make a bunch of notes. I did have a few notes about the character names and stuff, you know, just their surnames and their ages, which actually came in quite handy for the introduction. But the thing that I struggled most with as the writer was which huts they were assigned to, because they all given a different hut on the island, which necessarily all have quite similar names because, you know, they're all called things like Island Breeze or, you know, Forest Dreams or stuff like that. And then the storm hits. I don't think this is much of a spoiler. And half the huts are destroyed. So they all reassign to different huts and kind of have to double up. And I did find myself being like, wait, which hut is Lila? So I did make a little kind of timeline saying on this night she's in this hut and on this night she's in this hut. So
yeah. The huts all sounded very fun for sure too. So they are there to play a reality TV show game. And I kind of loved, I feel like as I was reading it, I was picking up on like some of the little parts from other different shows. But how did you, you said you kind of like watched some reality shows to prepare. And then like, how did you kind of pick how you were going to structure the rules of the game for One Perfect Couple?
It's funny. It was always there at the beginning that it would be a couples TV show. I think because, you know, one of the things that I loved about Traitors was the US version is slightly different. But the UK version, it was just exclusively regular people. There were no reality TV kind of existing sort of contestants. And the people that they did pick, I think they were pretty careful to choose just really regular, ordinary people. There were people of all ages. So, you know, there was like bus drivers and ex-military and teachers and just very normal people. And I loved that aspect of it. And I wanted to kind of try and preserve some aspect of that. So the idea of having a sort of couples reality TV show worked for me really well, because in that scenario you could have one half of the couple who was the person who would actually apply for this and want to go on this show. And in Lila's case, it's her boyfriend Nico, who is an aspiring actor, and he's desperate to get a kind of big career break, and she sort of slightly reluctantly goes along with this just to be a good girlfriend, really. And when she meets the other contestants, you discover that quite a few of them are in that boat. Like there's sort of one couple, half of the couple, who's, you know, a YouTuber or, an aspiring model or whatever it is. And then there's another half who's sort of been dragged along for the ride. But the other part of it was that there are so many TV shows which are about finding love. And I felt like they'd done virtually every single permutation of that. You know, there's marriage at first sight, and there's, you know, interviewing to be someone's partner, and then there's hooking up in the jacuzzi every, you know, there's so many different versions of that. So slightly meanly, I sort of thought, well, what if it was the other way around? What if you went into it as a couple? And actually, you know, to stay in it, you might have to split up with someone that you had been with for years. How would that go? How would you deal with that? How would you feel about that? And so that kind of aspect of it was always there from the beginning. And one slight regret I have about the book is I was sort of, because ultimately it is a crime novel, I was quite keen to sort of move the action on to the sort of the point, you know, the crimey kind of point of the book, which all happens after this huge storm on the island, when things really start to unravel and the stakes become much, much higher than just a regular reality TV show. But that meant that I didn't get as much time as I wanted to explore the mechanics of the game. And I sort of had all this kind of system of challenges and how would it work? And I didn't get to do very much of that, because you only sort of see them there for quite a short period before everything kind of gets destroyed.
It does. It picks up pretty quickly. So the other thing that I thought was cool that you touched on was how they do cast for stereotypes. And so they are typically like looking to fill a very certain role for like multiple different roles. So I wanted to know, would you go on a reality game TV show? And if you would, or if you just had to, what stereotype do you think they would cast you as?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, I would absolutely hate to go on a reality TV show.
I'm Me too.
Quite a private person. I very much need my alone time. I love yes. going out on the road and meeting readers, but I'm the kind of person that, you know, after I've kind of been to a party or, you know, been in a big group situation, I definitely need to go and lie down in a darkened room and not talk to
yes.
anyone for 4 hours. So being on a reality TV show with the cameras on 24/7 would be absolutely my idea of hell. So the yes. only way I could imagine being on a reality TV show would be if I was in the cast, in the crew. So, you know, if I was behind the camera, I actually kind of could imagine being that. And I fear, as a crime writer, I would be the person probably coming up with all the nefarious scenarios and being like, oh, well, what if we could get so-and-so and so-and-so together? And, you know, maybe we could put a bit of stress on X and see if we can make him crack. And I think that part of my imagination and personality could be incredibly dangerous if I was dealing with real people. I quite like the fact that, you know, all the people I send to their deaths are, you know, imaginary characters, you know, yes. RIP to all the people who die in One Perfect Couple, but they weren't real.
Yes.
Playing with real people's emotions and fates like that, I would find deeply uncomfortable, but I also imagine could be actually pretty irresistible once you started doing it.
Yes.
So I think that might be me. I might be the nefarious crew member setting everyone up to look awful and, you know, changing things around in edits and stuff. So
yes. I love that answer. That's, I feel like you're right. That is like probably what a lot of crime fiction writers would end up doing if they were somehow on set. That is so cool. Well, I absolutely loved it so much. I hope everyone else who reads it loves it so much. Where can people follow you to stay up to date with everything that you are writing?
My website is at ruthware.com, not very imaginative. I'm on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it this week.
Yeah.
Instagram, Facebook, Threads, which I'm increasingly enjoying quite a bit, as at Ruth Ware Writer, same tag across all platforms. And yeah, I love to chat, so come and find me on there, come and follow me, ask me a question. I always love shooting the breeze, you know, it's preferable to writing.
Right. That is so awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking with me about it, and I can't wait to see what comes out next.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It has been such a pleasure. I've had a ball. And thank you for having me on.